Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Tune in to ESPN 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Charlotte at First Horizon Park. Pregame begins at 6:20. First pitch 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Welcome back in to Robbie and Rexo, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Very excited to welcome on our guest line. He's had a little summer vacay. He's back. I don't even know what camp he is. I just know that Charles Robinson of Yahoo is up for this show at 5:15 in the morning. Now, I don't know. Maybe he's already hit the gym, man. I don't know what's going on with Charles these days. Charles, how are you and where are you?
I want to know where Robbie Stanley is when I'm up at 5 a.m. on the West Coast.
He's at Disney World right now. He and the family are at Disney World.
Probably on a ride already.
Yeah, that's completely ridiculous. I'm in Vegas right now. I'm on team number one, two. This is team number four for me. So,
oh, wow. Gone so, through,
yeah, let's see. Chargers. Started off with Chargers. I was there for in Dallas when Jerry carpet bombed his roster in his press conference. Rams and then Raiders today. So, already through four.
You know, if you're in Vegas, you should pop over to Big Ten Media Days. That's some of the dumbest crap that I've ever heard from a maybe the dumbest messaging. I know you don't care about college football.
James Franklin's loving it over there.
James Franklin is like the voice of reason in the Big Ten right now.
Well, aren't they killing? Like, they hate it here, right?
Yes.
Don't they hate? I read that they hate it in Vegas.
Oh, yeah. Franklin ripped the hell out of it. Yes. Which was actually pretty funny. But, yeah, you can check that out, too. I think it's at the Mandalay Bay, if I'm not mistaken. Just what hotel are you staying in?
Oh, not anywhere near the Strip, man. Come on, I'm as close to the facility as I can possibly get. I'm in like a Fairfield Inn near Henderson. So
good
yeah,
God,
make it sound more.
Can you at
glamorous.
Least get a Spring
Fake
Hill?
It.
I mean,
Fake
you know, jeez. Okay. Well, I appreciate you getting up, man, and we will get into some NFL topics at large. I guess this is a. We just started to talk about this, and of course it relates to Brian Callahan, and of course it relates to his predecessor, right? Because it's kind of like, to me, if you want to simplify, I think you could simplify the NFL, the leader of men head coach and the offensive tactician head coach, right? I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. But the question that I actually asked, Charles, is if you could pick one trait that matters the most as an NFL head coach, what would that be?
I mean, I told you when you brought this up before, it's completely subjective. It all depends on, you know, what does your roster look like? Where are you in the Super Bowl window continuum? Maybe who's your quarterback? But I think, look, like generally, I will tell you that in all the years that I've covered the NFL, if a coach does not have the ability to get players to buy in, that the coach actually knows what he's doing, that have faith in him actually being able to lead a team and be competent, you're dead in the water. Like a good example of this recently, I mean, there's been a few good examples recently, but like Frank Reich in Carolina, it was obvious fast, you know, inside that organization that the team had no faith in him knowing what he was doing. And, you know, I think of Nathaniel Hackett in Denver. Like, I remember after he got fired, like, talking to people inside the building, and they were, like, literally in game one after losing to, I think they were on the road in Seattle.
Was that the clock game where he, like, I'm like, dude, you can't even count?
Well, and he tried an absurd, I think it was like it was an insane field goal, like 64-yard field goal. I can't even remember off the top of my head. And like I had a couple of people who were like, you should have been in the locker room afterward. Like, you can literally see players who are like, he doesn't know what he's doing. Like, he doesn't know how to manage a game. He doesn't understand the analytics end of it. He had no idea that we'd never come close to hitting a field goal this close in Seattle, like, or this far in Seattle. Like, it was just, and they were like, you almost felt it go out of the window right then. And then the next couple of games just, you know, verified what players were already thinking about him. So I think, look, if you can't convince your roster that you're competent at the job, you're dead. Like, and I think guys pick that up really fast too. Like, I'm working on a story on Kevin O'Connell, and I went through the Rams, and one of the things that I think was a big kind of a lie detector for him pretty quickly was when he got in front of Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford had seen frauds. He'd seen coaches who knew what they were doing. Like, you know, you couldn't BS him. Like, he was just going to know whether or not you were competent or not. And he knew almost instantly that Kevin O'Connell knew what he was doing, had the confidence, could lead, you know, was, and it took no time at all for Stafford to jump on board, and every other player followed suit. They're like, okay, this guy clearly is legit, because Stafford is, you know, knows that the guy's a competent leader. So if you don't have that, I think you're pretty much dead.
I habitually overrate the Chargers. I'm trying to back off of that this year, which may be the year to properly overestimate them. You've been there. What do you think their chances are in that division of actually maybe catching the Chiefs?
Well, you know, it was interesting because the Mike Williams retirement, like on day one of camp, definitely threw them for a loop. Like, they were depending on Mike Williams, you know, being a piece, like, and not necessarily being, you know, the Mike Williams of years ago pre-injury, you know, but at the very least, they needed an ex who fit the role, you know, had a connection with Herbert, was a true, still very high level 50-50 ball guy. And there was no doubt that there was a role on that offense, a fairly prominent role carved out for him. And then he retires. And I think they were completely stunned by it. And they're sitting there and they're going, okay, you know, now what are we going to do? Because we got Quentin Johnston, who we want to turn a corner, but who's still dropping passes. We've got, you know, Trey Harris, the rookie who they're super high on, but again, he's a rookie. And you can't expect every rookie to come in and play like Ladd McConkey. You know, Keandre Lambert Smith, another guy they took in the fifth round that they're real high on. But, you know, just immediately I could see, wow, they're kind of trying to figure out what are they going to do here. Look, the potential's there. Like McConkey, they were super high in McConkey. You know, apparently his weight hasn't really changed, but he's stronger and kind of thicker, bigger. Like he got stronger in the offseason. Which, you know, everyone's being the size that he is, there's and some of the injuries he had at Georgia, sort of like, is this guy going to be able to sustain the role in the offense, which is going to be considerable? And they think his ceiling is higher than it was last year. Like, I think they feel like he could be an all-pro level player with the volume they want to throw at him. Can he, you know, remain healthy? And I think they feel pretty good about that, the way he came in physically. Another position to me that is going to be vital. Mekhi Becton, you know, at right guard. If he can replicate what he did in Philadelphia, you know, next to Joe Alt, the right tackle there, they're going to be very well put together from an offensive line standpoint. You know, Rashawn Slater at left tackle. They got to figure out the left guard center situation. But, you know, you can see that the offense has definitely, you know, an ability to be a big time. Marion Hampton looked great, you know, when I was there. They got bigger on the defensive line. You know, they feel good, but I don't know. You tell me. Like, I one of the things I looked at was, you know, for Harbaugh, I went back and looked at those 49er years where, you know, came, you know, got into the organization, had success right away, took the Super Bowl leap in year two, you know, was a high level team for the next few years. The difference between that team and the Chargers, the defense is nowhere close. I mean, that Niners defense was so dominant. I don't think, hey, they've installed culture. They've stacked talent. There's obviously a ton of belief in Harbaugh after the success in year one, but they just don't have the horses on defense that he had in San Francisco. So, you know, there's still work, I think to do. And, you know, I don't think this is the year that they capture that division, but I think they should at least be on the competitive level where they were last year.
So you mentioned the Cowboys. I think it was Kevin Clark said this week, if you gave Jerry Jones a choice, like you can win three Super Bowls, but you can never do a press conference. He would not take the Super Bowls. Is it that bad?
I mean, I don't know how many at Oxnard, like forever, right? Like that's often where I would start. So I feel like I've been at all of them for years and years, and then I've been there for how many times outside the locker room, you know, after games where he holds impromptu press conferences every single game. And this was the first one. There's always kind of a jaw wagging quality to his press conferences. He'll always say something crazy. But this was the first time where I'm like, I don't remember him just smacking players, like just kind of taking jabs at a bunch of different guys. Like there was no reason. You know, the Micah Parsons thing, he didn't even really need to address it. I mean, he got a ton of questions, but I think the depth, you know, the message was pretty clear early on. Like, you know, hey, there's clearly something wrong in this negotiation right now. I think part of it has to do with the fact they won't talk to David Mulugeta, his agent. You know, there's some complication there. This is dragging. You can address that, but you don't have to go, you know, okay, well, here are the games you missed last year. And by the way, here are the games Dak missed last year. And oh, by the way, you guys always criticize us for not getting ahead on contracts. But geez, we got ahead on Trayvon Diggs and Terrence Steele. How's that looking? Like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, how many core players is he basically going to, you know, throw a rock at this point in this press conference? And then, you know, he gets off the podium afterward and he does his like 15 minutes to the side. And, you know, he mispronounces David Mulugeta's name, which is, might be a slip of the tongue. But again, you know, this is one of the, arguably the best agent in the game right now, if not, you know. I mean, there's just certain things that you're like, what is going on here? And then on top of it, you have the typical wandering nature of just his press conferences where you're like, I don't even know what I'm supposed to be deciphering right now. And, I feel like, and we've talked about this before on the show, there's some slippage there. You can see he's getting older. Even he admitted he feels like he's on the clock. Like he knows he doesn't have a lot of time left to get something done. But I don't even know how you start out a situation like that. And then you see what's happened since, you know, you got other players that now have to sound off on it. CeeDee Lamb has to talk about kind of a weird beef between Micah and Jerry Jones. And, you know, Micah's saying what he's saying about being disappointed. It's that circus atmosphere. And sometimes I think he does it just to keep attention on the Cowboys and he likes to revel in it. I just don't think this circus was not the right circus. Like typically you could argue that there's some method to the madness, not this time.
I want to ask you, Charles, this is a topic that it's like, I haven't done a lot on it just because I do think that people's eyes glaze over and it's like, okay, whatever. But just the big picture of all this crap with the NFLPA, what is the ultimate impact of this?
I mean, Lloyd Howell did a lot of crazy stuff in only 2 years on the job.
He got some stuff done.
Lemon
pepper wings in Magic City, man.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny because when I was in Rams camp, I was talking to one of their executives. And he was just kind of telling me, like, you respected Lloyd. Like, Lloyd had come through and, you know, visited all these ownership groups. And, you know, this particular executive with the Rams was very involved with, like, league business and had a lot of exposure to him. And he's like, yeah, he's like, I thought he was good for the union. And he's like, but then, you know, you see all this stuff and it's, we were just kind of laughing. Like, it's a bold move to take the Metro car to, you know, Tootsie's Cabaret and park it outside for 8 hours in the middle of the night. I'm like, yeah. And then expense it. Like,
that's bold.
That's one. Yeah. We've never seen that before. So overall, I can't tell you what's going to happen here because you scraped off your executive director. You scraped off your your chief of strategy, J.C. Tretter, who, you know, at least had connectivity to the DeMaurice Smith era, at least understood how things should function. Yeah, he completely, I think you could definitely criticize him for setting up this secret process that ultimately ended up producing Lloyd Howell in that role. But when you take away both of those guys, there's just not a lot of experienced leadership to now set this up moving forward. And I've talked to people who were in the building that no longer are, people who left under Lloyd Howell, and they're even saying they don't know, you know, how this is really ultimately going to pan out. So it's clearly a very, very important moment for the union, particularly given that, look, you're heading for another CBA. I think the NFL is going to want to open up the current CBA to try and get that 18th game in before they negotiate the next CBA, although I'm actually now starting to hear from other people that maybe the league is willing to put the brakes on and not squeeze the 18th game in until they actually do the whole next CBA. But yeah, I mean, it's a mess, and it's not good. If you're a fan, it's not good from a couple of different standpoints. Number one, do you want to see, you don't want to see a work stoppage, right? So that means you want continuity there. You want people to know what they're doing, you know, people who are already starting to incrementally move toward a negotiation, even if it is years off. And then number two, and no one really talks about this, but this one actually I think is pretty important. The player survey, I don't know what they're going to do with that now. And that's been pretty impactful across the league. Like
Tretter's baby, his one good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, George Atala and the ex-exec there and J.C. Tretter, that was their baby. I mean, they created it. They grew it. And then when Atala, you know, left, you know, it put it into Tretter's hands. And now I don't know that there's any, you know, it's early, but I can just tell you, I don't know that there's a big appetite there for anyone to pick up the mantle and carry it. Number one, and number two, I don't know the functionalities there because Tretter was handling so much of that. And Atala, they were handling so much of that, you know, just themselves. And now when you remove them from the process, at the very least, I will bet you that player report card takes a 1 year pause at minimum, but I think it might go away. I really truly, owners hate it.
Yeah,
that's the only good thing the union has.
I hate the idea of that going away. I really do.
I know. I had told like some of the union membership, I had said like, hey, of all the years I've covered the league, I can tell you I've never seen the union create a tool that has worked so well and so immediately as that report card did the last 3 years. I think it was year two of it. The report card had come out, and I remember Clark Hunt was somewhere in Kansas City. He's in Kansas City. He's speaking at some event. There's all these media there. It was about this stadium, about like, you know, working on a new stadium project, whatever. And the report card comes out, and literally in real time, I watched him all of a sudden get confronted about all these grades and how poorly they had scored yet again for the second year in a row. And you could see it hit him. Like, it really rocked him a little bit. And I'm like, I've never seen the union create anything like this that gets to owners in a way that they actually care about. Woody Johnson's been, you know, on public record saying he hates that survey and just totally ripping it. And now you're talking about this thing that actually worked and made changes that, you know, players should care about. Now it looks like it's probably going to go away because of the ineptitude of what's happened.
Okay, I want to bring it back to the beginning, Charles, the coaching question, because I couldn't, and we did not discuss this, I couldn't agree more. I said this earlier in the show this week. Like, that's the whole thing. Your players need to believe that you're helping them, that you are competent and that you can help them win, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. So I know we've talked about this before, but I mean, it comes up now, obviously, you know, it's year two and all, we know all the different things, timelines, Cam Ward, et cetera, et cetera. But remind me, just around the league, because you mentioned, I mean, for example, Brian Callahan was one of the most lauded coaches, assistant coaches by players A guy who has the, you know, has the background, all that stuff. Terrible first year around the league, and just or even just your perception, is Brian Callahan up to a job like this?
I mean, I have to go look. No one knocked him going in. Like anyone I spoke to when he got the job, I mean, they thought he was very much worth, you know, that opportunity. And listen, there are good players inside Kansas City that have backed him. Joe Burrow believes in him as a coach. You know, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins. You know, there's a number of players there that believe in him as an offensive mind, as, you know, like that he absolutely can be the high level play caller that can craft an offense similar to what was going on with Kansas City, given the right talent. I don't know that that's necessarily changed. I mean, look, of course there have been some things, you know, how he reacted toward Will Levis that was very public and on camera and all those things, you know, that does resonate where it's like, people see that and they're like, geez, like maybe that's not the best way to react to a quarterback in a situation where it's very public. It's very visible. You know, you're going to get asked about it, you know, after the game. I didn't have a problem with it at the time. Obviously criticism piles on when there's not success that ultimately follows it. I guess my question here is, and I would ask you guys this, is he's been through 1 year, right? You tell me, is Will Levis, now you've seen Will Levis, now we know he wasn't, also now we know he wasn't healthy for a portion of the season, clearly. You're telling me that that's a guy he should have gone out and what, had a Pro Bowl level season with Will Levis at quarterback? The offensive line, I mean, I need to understand why fans are literally tacking every single thing onto Bill Callahan after one season, being exposed to him for one season. If it is a competency thing, fine. But you need to tell me. You need to tell me. Give me the story. Give me the anecdote that shows he has no idea what he's doing. Because I got that with Nathaniel Hackett after 1 year. Do you have that with Bill Callahan? Like,
Brian,
have not heard.
Brian, not Bill, but Bill's here,
sorry,
too.
I'm sorry. Brian, okay. Yeah, Brian. Yeah, Brian Callahan. I have not heard that after 1 year about him. Have you? Like, I'm asking you guys. You're there. You're around it all the time. Is there this anecdote that he just absolutely has no idea what he's doing?
No.
Okay.
He's got he had a bad roster the same way Vrabel had a bad roster his last couple of years, which was his unfortunate undoing.
I think another thing too that, and I knew this was going to happen once Vrabel got the Patriots job, he was going to be, you know, he wins the podium. Like, he was going to go into New England, they were going to love it. He was going to sit, you know, be in your face, and, you know, we've already seen him kind of jousting with reporters and all that, and that all plays, and then you see all the you know, you see the clips, and I knew that was going to be bad for Brian Callahan because people are going to go, oh, we had this guy, and,
yep,
you know, so.
No doubt about it.
All I can say is let's go through a second season and see. And if it's a replication of the first season, okay, then clearly there's an issue here.
Charles Robinson, Yahoo Sports, an absolute trooper for coming on. Appreciate it, buddy. Let us know how you do on the craps tables. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right, guys.
Thanks, bro.
Charles Robinson there.
Does he go back to bed now?
Great stuff.
He
That's
should.
A good question.
I would. Know.
I'm going to just keep texting him during the show and make sure he can't. Maybe if his phone, you know. Real quick, I want to let people know this September, Tim McGraw is going to be performing at Trinitix's Rock the Cradle in Nashville, a meaningful event supporting newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. Get your tickets now at rockthecradlenashville.org. And we come back, a special edition of the Rex Rant, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.